Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I am so happy to be here today because it's Thursday, which means it's Big Show Day, which means that I get to hang out with amazing people and just have a really fun time. And so who are the fun people that are with me today? Well, first, there's Ian. How are you, Ian?
I'm great, thank you very much. I'm good. Been teaching this week, a bit of prep and stuff. No, all good. All good. Nice quiet week. Nothing too mad.
Awesome. Awesome. And Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing really well. I'm it's crazy that it's Thursday already, right? Thursday? That's what today is.
It's Thursday and I'm with you.
Yeah.
How is it possibly Thursday?
Yeah, that's impossible. But I mean, it's been a good week. I signed my lease yesterday for the new apartment in Vienna. So, I mean, still July hasn't changed. So it's still a long way to go. But no, I'm good. Took half a day off yesterday to like for a 3-minute signing in person.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, whatever, 2-4 hours of train trip, whatever, is it 4 or 5 minutes of actual doing something.
Wow.
That's Austria for you. So.
Well, hopefully the train ride was nice.
It was really nice and amazing and relaxing. I got actually some work done because I was like, I wasn't in the off, well, here in my home office, but I still responded to some messages and organized some stuff. So all good.
That's awesome.
That was really cool. And the weather was nice. It was like nice. What was it? Like 55 degrees Fahrenheit. So about, what is that? 12, 13 degrees Celsius. And sunny and no rain. None of that. So spring is coming.
Nice. And let's see. I am looking at my chart because sub-freezing temperatures, the conversion always screws me up. So let's see.
I think sub-freezing is more or less the same.
Like, yeah, they're not a lot of difference, is there?
Yeah, no, there's a difference. Like the temperatures that I'm looking at for yesterday were like 4 below. All right, that's minus 20 C. And actually my chart, it only goes to minus 24 C, which is minus 11.2 F.
Only.
Only.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, I live in Colorado, and we have had temperatures this winter already that go below the conversion chart that I have on the wall right here. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. I actually do have a chart right here taped to the wall so that every time I look at the temperature, I can look over at the chart and do the conversion. And I'm really trying to be part of the modern world, not the stupid American world.
Well, at least you're not Canadian. Nothing against Canadians, but when it comes to measurements, they're even crazier.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Well, anyhow, Patrice, I hope that it stays warmer for you and 50 Fahrenheit, especially this time of year. That's pretty nice.
No, I'm very happy. It makes it's the craziest thing. It makes such a difference in like your mood and your energy level when it's one, not as dark outside anymore, and two, also not as cold outside anymore.
Yeah, that's
and the sun is beginning. Shining, so
that's beginning to be an improvement over here now. We're getting nicer days, and it's not as cold.
You get nicer rain now.
No, we haven't had any rain for weeks. We haven't had any rain for weeks. That's a cruel rumor put out by the Lancastrians.
Yeah, I think that was Batman who said, like, in the summer they have just nicer rain, warmer rain. Like
you learn to take it as you can get it, but you know, lighter and brighter. That's always nice. You know, like Rich, speaking of, how are you?
I'm just on Canva designing a t-shirt that says, at least you're not Canadian.
Oh my god.
That's gonna be worth money.
I'll buy it.
I want whatever 10 cents for every t-shirt.
Yeah. I might put an A on the end. At least you're not from Canada, eh?
Oh, I love that. I love
there we go. Yeah. Right.
A boot.
My god, the shirt's going to sell so well.
Oh, yes.
Sorry, it feels mean especially in America. Canadians because they just smile back at you. I mean, yeah,
they're
you nice can't upset them.
Yeah.
They're always
I
nice
love
people.
Canada. Like, yeah, I'm
really
a big fan.
Really does.
Like, I have enjoyed every trip that I've taken to Canada. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're nice folk. No, I've been
if you like, the best thing, in my opinion, that you can watch is The Amazing Race Canada. They compete against each other, but in the nicest possible way.
I'm developing awesome. A sort of Homer Simpson, Ned Flanders relationship with Canada as I grow older. Like, just stop being so nice. Just stop it. It's irritating now.
Mm. Congratulations, Rich. You're now American.
I think this is it.
Yes.
So bloody woman. Oh, never mind.
We went up to Canada for part of our honeymoon. We went up to Niagara and stuff, and people there, everyone was so nice. It's just such a good place.
You know, every country I've been in, everyone has been so nice. The one country where I was afraid I was about to get in a fight, England.
I was thinking this. I was
that
probably
sounds
quite
about
reasonable.
Right. Yep.
That's probably quite reasonable. Yeah. Yep.
All right. So, the story is fly to London, get off the plane, and which airport did I fly into? I think it was Gatwick. And, you know, it's a long flight across the ocean, and I've landed and I'm ready for some tea. And so get out to the terminal area, and there's a tea place there, which turns out, and now I know, is like the most horrible tea chain you can possibly go to. And
we have tea chains.
You do. And okay. And some of them will sell you really crappy tea. And
but it's the tea chains for the tourists, right? So
yeah, usually. Yeah. What do they call this poor quality vendor of?
I don't even remember what the name was. I remember the sign for it. It was white letters on kind of a rusty brown colored background.
Yes. Costa.
There we go.
Oh so,
yeah.
Costa.
All right. Okay. I'm with you now.
Yep. Okay. So so I order this tea. And I'm going to put a little bit of sugar into it, and I got some like soy milk or whatever for it. And I'm standing there where you put all this stuff in, and this guy, who's obviously from the country, is like reaching over me and trying to get at something, and I realize I'm in his way. And he goes, sorry. And I do the polite American thing, and I say, oh, excuse me. And that was like fighting words. And he locks eyes with me, and he goes, I said, I'm sorry. And I'm like, I don't understand. And he thought I was being a jerk, and I honestly didn't understand why he was so upset until later on when I was telling someone else what happened, and they said, oh no, when you said excuse me, that was not taken as you asking to be excused for being in their way, but instead that was a confrontational statement.
Oh, yeah, it depends on your inflection.
Yes, and but that can also happen in the U.S., I can tell you that.
Yeah. So there's a polite excuse me, and then there's a excuse me. And apparently, am I gonna have to? Are we gonna have a fight? Excuse me, but I might have to try and kill you with one of those wooden stirrer things. Now, is that how this is going to go down in Costa? Kind of.
That's pretty much what was going on. Although I didn't think I was saying something with an inflection that would be interpreted aggressively, but he did. And
I mean, to be fair, you were probably pretty tired. So
I was tired. Yeah.
Yeah,
anyhow,
people get a moment, little bit grumpy.
I was sure I was about to have a throwdown 15 minutes after landing in London.
I have to say this, Jeff. You're going to a coffee shop that is named after the guys who crashed a cruise liner just to impress a woman.
Well, they should have worked on making tea that tasted better.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing that for years and still haven't quite worked it out.
Yeah, it shattered a stereotype that I had hoped was right, which is that all tea in the UK is good. And it turns out that, in fact, is not the case.
Nope. Honestly, I think the best tea I've had was in San Francisco.
I've had some really good tea in San Francisco.
I don't remember what the place was called. It was next to Yerba Buena.
Need to go to Betty's. Oh, to get somewhere. Yeah. Come up to Betty's. Yeah. Full experience.
It's going to bug me. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of it, but yes, very good tea.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Holy crap, we haven't done any stories yet.
Welcome to the tea show. Yes, and, Ben. Ben, you know, we have a show here. You can talk. Hi,
Ben. Ben, you look sharp, and I really feel like I need to step up my wardrobe game. So maybe I'll put on pants. Maybe. But not today.
Why would anybody wear pants? You can't see down there anyway.
Well, I mean, it depends on where the camera ends up. But since we're not doing OnlyFans, you know.
Only Jeff's.
Only Jeff's. Just assume I'm wearing whatever it is that you want to think I'm wearing.
And we all took a minute to think about that. That's good.
Yeah, I gave you a moment to think. You're welcome.
It looks like Ian has a story.
I do.
Yeah, I just saw that drop in there.
Please let that be.
Yeah, I thought I posted in there. And also, there's a great place for tea if you ever come to the UK.
So, all right, tell us about your story. And I'm not even clicking the link. I'm clicking the tea link to see if it's a place that I had tea already. No. All right. Well, I'll check it out. All right, tell us about your story.
You can visit me if you do. My story is a nice, easy one. It's another one of these nice. I like all these stories about things that we were told years ago would be what happening now. And they come back again. In the UK, there was a lovely tradition, a TV series called Tomorrow's World. And it was a half-hour show, Rich will remember it, where they would present various science topics in a really not sort of nice way that everyone could follow. And they'd be talking about what would happen in the future. And it feels like one of those has come back to see me again today. I mean, actually, the article I posted has what looks like a Tomorrow's World thing from the 60s from the BBC archive, which is lovely. Have a watch of that later on if you get a chance. But they're saying that they've been doing research both in Japan and in Oxford. And they've asked 65 AI experts. And I don't know whether they've asked ChatGPT as well. But they reckon around 40% of our time spent on houseworks and caring will be automated in some manner. We'll be using machines, we'll be having robo-vacs, we'll be having machines that take all their dirty dishes and clean them without us having to do the whole stacking thing and everything else. I mean,
it's called the dishwasher.
Yeah, but more than that. But the thing of the origami that is making all the things that are dirty go in the dishwasher. Because there is there's a skill and a technique to that.
Yeah.
And it's Tetris.
It's very Tetris, and I really enjoy doing it.
My wife just throws everything in there and hopes for the best. The good lady just throws everything in there and hopes for the best, and I'm there carefully stacking the plates in the optimum order to get the best, convert all the best work together. But the idea is, really, my question is, how realistic do we think this is? Do we see, given I remember the same show years ago showing me flying cars, living on the moon, and all these kind of things as factual news and things that we were looking forward to in the 2000s. And I was talking to my wife about this. I was saying, if the guys that were publishing, were making these shows in the 60s or so came back today, the world wouldn't look as different as it would expected it to. There'd be some taller buildings, some shinier buildings, more people, more people, shinier, taller buildings. But I've got a computer in my pocket that would have taken up a room.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
communication has changed.
I'm pretty sure someone who lived in the 60s and then jumped ahead to 2023 would be really surprised.
Cars and things would look all different, and all that kind of road furniture and things would look different.
Yeah, it's cars are much bigger, but it's also all the services. I mean, it's not just about the computer in your pocket. It is what we can do with a computer in our pocket. I can hail a car, order food,
like, yeah, exactly.
All of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something I don't think anybody really imagined that way. I think they thought about robots bringing us food and all of that.
Yeah, the robot waiter coming through. And, exactly. Your dinner, sir.
And we might still get there. We might still get there. But
I'm going to go sushi bar with a conveyor belt in and things like that. Yeah. I mean, stuff like those things. I mean,
they're very around them. I've just put a link in the chat to a bit from A Tomorrow's World from 1989, which is what the world will be like in 2020. And it is disturbingly close. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are intricacies in the detail of, you know, the way things panned out, but in terms of the what we'll be able to do and when and how easy it will be, they're pretty much there. It's quite amazing. Tomorrow's World was famous for just showing us so much stuff that it's like,
yeah, we were
never
we were,
happened.
Never, mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's some stuff they were spot on with, and the broadcasters were all sort of genuinely the scientists or very interested in science. So it wasn't just a pretty face smiling and telling us, look at this thing. It was people that actually knew what they were talking about a lot of the time.
Think about science fiction and think about especially science fiction in the 60s and 70s. And then look at today. And sure, there is some stuff we haven't done yet or will never do. But there's also stuff that we have way surpassed. And they imagined that, like they were thinking that is the future.
Mm.
Like in hundreds of years, and we did that in 60. Mm. So I think it's hard for us to predict the future, but to get the general direction right, I think we are there. And I mean I've seen it's about 15 years ago, about 10-15 years, probably 10 years ago. I've seen like robots like bringing you food at home, stuff like that, that was working back then. I mean, not in any, let's say, you could buy it way, but in a way, two robots, you tell one robot to bring you a Coke, and the other robot goes to the fridge, gets the right beverage, pours it in a glass, takes the glass to the first robot, hands it over, and that first robot brings it to you. That was working, I said, about, I think, like early, like 2011, 2012, something like that. That was working.
Yeah. And now that, I mean, the thing with robots now that they have got is the sensitivity in actual robotics. It isn't just a great big clamp that goes clunk against a thing, but they can actually do gently pick something up and move it. And so dexterous, as they become more dexterous, it is definitely, I mean, I was watching something the other week about sort of how movement in robots now has come on leaps and bounds in the last 10 years or more.
I mean, just look at, I mean,
they're more and more not, naturally like us.
Yeah. I mean, look at robotics in manufacturing, like especially cars. Mm-hmm. For sure, that is not general robotics that is smart and knows, like, you can tell what to do and all of that. It's a single purpose robot.
Mm.
But it is, I mean, there is barely a human in some factories.
Yeah. Sort of motor building a motor car nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few people there supervising the machines.
Isn't it a bit of overkill for things? I mean, like you say, the dishwashing robot is a dishwasher. It's not a robot that stands at the sink and does dishes. And in this, you know, like in the same way that if you want a Coke, the better thing would be to have like a Coke dispensing machine rather than two robots that in a chain bring you a kind of Coke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
But in terms of this article, they say 39% of chores done by 2030. Yeah. I'd be happy for it to be 100% by tomorrow. I mean, don't let me hold anything back on this at all. They can get on with it. I do think the one thing, like, you know, the holy grail of like health monitoring is blood sugar without piercing.
Yeah, non-intrusive.
Non-intrusive blood sugar, right? I think the holy grail of home cleaning robots is ironing. I think that's the one.
Yeah, I like that. Okay,
but serious question. That might be one of the cases where we will never get it because it will just be easier to just hand that off to someone outside. Like someone just picks up your laundry, takes it somewhere, brings it back, and that is a robot that does that.
Yeah, you're still cheating. You're still essentially in a
robot. Yeah, still something like off. That. Yeah. I mean, just like people are ordering food nowadays instead of cooking at home, like a lot of times.
True.
Because it is cheaper, cheaper-ish.
I'm still holding out for a massive food meal dispensing fridge, right? Mm-hmm. Like the bean-to-cup coffee machine. No, like a big fridge, and you put different food in different containers, and it's linked to the internet with menus, and you pick a thing, and it cooks it and spits it out at you.
Mm-hmm.
That's my
food replicator.
Yeah, the replicator. I was trying to think of that. The Star Trek replicator is still a thing I want. Mm-hmm. I have one of those, please. Boom, and it appears.
Well, we're a step closer to that with 3D printers.
Yeah, true.
With 3D printers and with the Beyond Meat stuff, for example.
That's true. We have food grade 3D printers that are printing meat for us now.
Oh, mm-hmm. I've seen 3D printed cake, and that was good enough for me. Like, you know, there's cake. Yeah. Good place to start.
I'm with you.
I'm sure we will get there eventually. And I think that's something I've been thinking about as I said, the Beyond Meat and so on, like all the alternative things that are based on grains, soy, whatever. I think that is something we will need if we ever want to leave this freaking planet. Like if you want to live on the moon or on Mars or in another solar system, we might need that because it's really hard to grow stuff if you're not on Earth.
That's true.
We're trying that too. But I mean, I can tell you one thing. I don't think we will have cows in space.
No, that's not cost-effective or practical.
I want to see that movie though.
Cows in space.
Yeah,
cool.
Yes, so look at the International Space Station. It's been in service for over 20 years, and with the best scientific minds in the world working on making that self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, it is still an incredibly expensive catered hotel.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It is not self-sufficient at all.
With crappy food.
Yeah, with crappy food.
But one of you. Bad. But one of you.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I really liked about The Expanse. That was one of the things they, like, it's science fiction, but they figured out. They're like, okay, we have to basically print/grow food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about some of the tasks that they thought automation could do here, were including like teaching your child, accompanying your child.
Already happening.
Yeah, already happening. Taking care of an older family member. I mean, that was Japan from that particular one. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not entirely convinced of that, but.
Well, I think taking care of an older family member falls more under the umbrella of some form of companionship. With minimal like physical support, like being able to pick something up off the floor, or go and grab a thing and bring it over, but not so much like having a nurse assistant.
No, but I could also see that.
See, now I'm imagining.
I mean, that's harder,
lots of Japanese old people in like what Sigourney Weaver wears at the end of Aliens. with the big robot suit moving things around. That's how this is going to go. Isn't it?
With big exoskeleton.
Lots of, lots of tiny elderly Japanese people in the middle of them working them. It'd be great. And this is also another movie I would like to see.
Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Regenerating movie yesterday.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I will go and see this movie.
No, I just want to make with the time Ant-Man 7. Go on, sorry.
Say old people with a timeshare on the moon. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
Right. That would be a great idea for a TV show.
On Apple TV?
Yes. Yep. It would. All right. We should probably talk about more stories. And yeah. Ben, you dropped a story in already. So tell us about Microsoft and Nintendo.
So, Jeff, Microsoft is promising additional content for your newly bought Switch. they have signed a binding 10-year agreement to bring Xbox Studios games to the Nintendo Switch and presumably whatever successor there is. And there's a pretty good reason for this. Microsoft is currently trying to buy a French game maker Activision Blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
They are indeed.
Yep. And neither British nor American authorities are too keen on this deal right now. So So Microsoft is doing this as a concession, which, to be honest, I think might actually be a pretty good one. Because the way things are going, titles exclusive to a single platform may be firmly a thing of the past in 10 years.
Yeah, my take on this is that it is not an altruistic move on Microsoft's part.
Oh, no.
This is very tactical.
I mean, come
on. It's a typical tactical move where they promise something today to basically get the regulators in a good mood and say, yeah, okay, it's fine. You can approved. You can do this. Okay, 10 years is fine. And then either they don't follow it at all. We look at your WhatsApp or Facebook. Or they just 10 years is not a long time for a studio like this. And then the next game comes out, the next big thing, and it is not on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a political move for them. It's a good easy move because you take the mobile version of Call of Duty and you put it on the Switch, and it takes someone an afternoon, and then you've got Call of Duty on the Switch for whatever. We've seen this before when who is it makes Final Fantasy games, the
Square Activision, Square Enix.
Yeah, when the Final Fantasy whatever is coming to the Switch, it's the mobile version. It's coming to the Switch. It's going to be great in the mobile version, like on your phone. But then they just sort of put it out there and went, but it's on there. It's not, though. But no, it is. And they'll do the same thing with this. But yeah, it is entirely political. But hey, you get Call of Duty on your Switch if that's what you want.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Their commitment to doing a same day release as Xbox, that will definitely take a little more work on their part, but I'm assuming, as someone who actually doesn't even code games at all, that coding for the Switch, once you have that initial mobile game version, is not as big of a deal.
In my head, it works like you just turn the graphics on your game down and it will run on the Switch. And that's probably just massively ignorant.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, developing for the Switch is a lot like developing for iOS or Android, since they use basically the same hardware.
Right.
Yeah, if you've got similar gear. Yeah, so it's going to be, it's just another mobile platform, essentially. Mm-hmm. We're all said and done. So it should be portable, you would have thought, between the platforms. It does mean though you're not going to get the full fat game that you get on an Xbox on your Switch.
Yeah, yeah, it does. But
because you just can't do it, can it?
There are, well, why? What? So what we're saying is that there's something about the game itself that the Switch couldn't possibly run a first person shooter game. And on a first-person online shooter game, which is a ludicrous concept. Of course it can run a first-person online shooter game. There are several on there right now, including ones made by Nintendo. So that can work. So the other element we're talking about, can it run Xbox and PlayStation level graphics? Well, no. So don't put ray tracing in it. You know, like just don't have it run at 4K. Just turn it down and put it on. So I'm very suspicious when companies are like, oh yeah, we can't make that run on the Switch. Like, what do you mean you can't make that run on the Switch? It was when they stopped making the when 2K Games stopped releasing the wrestling game on the Switch, saying we can't make it work. You think there was a wrestling game on the Game Boy. What's your problem? Like I know you.
Oh my God, there was. You're right.
Yeah, I know you can't make like the PS5 version work on the Switch. But seriously, you're a game developing company. What's your problem? Why you can't do that? Come on. I think the gaming industry do bullshit is a lot with what they're talking about a lot. And in terms of what's possible and what they can do, so I kind of went off on a little rant. Then I don't know where that came from. Sorry.
Well, I looked up the hardware specs on the Switch just for fun. I mean, now that I have one, I might as well know this. So it has ARM 4 Cortex A57. Let's see. It's an ARM processor with 4 Cortex A57 cores, 1.02 gigahertz. And then for graphics, it's 256 Maxwell base CUDA cores, undocked, 307 megahertz, 393 gigaflops, docked at 768 megahertz and 500 gigaflops. Holy crap. I mean, yes, I know for current gaming, that's not going to give you what you need for the really high-end graphics, but still, that's some serious processing power. And it's in a little thing that you can throw in a bag.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what? In terms of that, with the Switch, I was always disappointed that they didn't do one without a screen that just worked. Because how big would that Switch be if you took the screen out of it? And yeah, was not
tidy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and just made it as like a HDMI dongle.
Yeah, like a Fire. Like the original Fire TV thing. The one that was just literally a USB stick, effectively.
Yeah, basically.
HDMI plug on it, wang it in the back of your TV and off you go.
Yeah, and I felt they missed a trick when they did that. And I know there's the whole, well, it's a Switch, but then they did the Switch Lite that doesn't dock to the TV. So clearly they're okay with making one that doesn't dock to the TV. Why not make one that isn't portable and is the size of a pack of cards?
Yeah, I mean, because I think probably because the idea is they want that to be the notional replacement for the Game Boy, isn't it? That kind of platform that you can throw it in your bag and take it with you where you go. That was the whole shtick for the Game Boy. Why not have the same, but with modern games?
It's a weird
one. So having no screen doesn't seem to make enough sense to me, unless they mark it as a new Wii something or other
that
tethers it to your telly. Or
So it's one of those things. I guarantee there's one in a lab in Nintendo. There is one. They made one and then looked at it and decided no. But someone,
because we'd sell lots of these and not the other things we want to sell, which are more expensive and make us more money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their margins are probably much better on the models that have screens.
That will be a lot to do with it.
That would be my guess. All right. Well, then, Patrice, you had the next story in the queue.
I do.
Look at that.
I do.
I said a British thing in the queue.
So, you know, AI is in the news a lot recently, and everybody and their grandma are coming up with new AI things. So Spotify thought, so what is the thing that people want that we can do with AI? And the answer was a radio DJ that talks bullshit on the show.
Oh my God.
So, so that is what they did. They're introducing...
Spotify just invented podcasters.
No, radio hosts.
Yeah.
It's radio hosts, literally. It's called DJ, and it kind of has two parts. One is the kind of the expected thing, like a curated AI-supported playlist. But then you get commentary from the AI about the tracks and so on. So what a DJ would do. And I'm like, why the hell? I mean, they say the voice is... like, what did they say? Stunningly realistic. But I mean, if you've seen what like the crap that ChatGPT is producing sometimes, I mean, sounds really good, sounds very confident. It's just completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure this will be a disaster. I mean, why? I mean, I don't get it. Like, the radio DJ part was the least, like, the thing I hated the most. And I wanted the least.
Yeah. Why would I do that? Yeah. Why do I want people talking on my music on my music playlist anymore? I don't.
This is why people went to streaming music.
This is exactly why people. We didn't want to listen to the moron talking between the tracks.
Yeah, if I want to, exactly, then I'll turn, like, I'll go to whatever, my local radio station, turn on the live stream and listen to that. So, yeah, I don't get it.
Is it in there now? Can I?
Yeah, I think they just started
shipping. No, only in the US and Canada. So unless you
okay, only in the US and Canada, okay.
According to that article there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm now picturing... the AI trying to coast spot or trying to kind of what's the word mimic Spotify's podcast hosts.
Oh my God. Yes.
Oh my God.
Well, I mean, you couldn't tell the difference. So it's all good.
I'm waiting now to hear the announcement that, iHeartRadio has licensed Spotify's technology or created their own. And now for all of the radio stations across the United States that they serve, where it's just one DJ for the whole country. Now they don't even need that.
No.
Yeah.
They just have,
Now it makes me think there's an equally a large radio network in the UK that's bought up all the small independent local radio stations. Equally, there's one group of guys that run the thing, and it's not local anymore. Yeah. And with those ones, I could see now they can go to another step where they can even get rid of the DJs and just have some simulacrum of a DJ sit there going, "And now it's so and so," along with some random facts. It's scraped from Wikipedia.
Yep.
And
well, no, not even scraped from Wikipedia, made up.
Made up.
That's
made
the
up,
point. Yeah. Completely made up.
And here's Taylor Swift with her latest hit, following up from her last smash, Another Brick in the Wall.
Yeah. After the success we had with Bohemian Rhapsody, you know. Yeah, exactly.
Just imagine Kara DJ, Meat Sacks. Here is your next track.
Yep. Yep.
That would actually be funny. Yeah, I don't get it. I don't know why. I mean, I'm pretty sure this is just like a typical marketing bullshit bingo thing. Okay, everybody is doing AI, so we have to do it too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why you would. The playlist part, I can totally understand, but I think they've been doing that all along anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Oh, the playlist that they'll curate for you is a thing they've always had. It's a nice feature. I use it quite a bit because it throws the old tune back my way that I've forgotten about. And so that's great. I'll have that. That's lovely.
Yeah. Everybody's doing it, so they have to do it.
I think you're right. Spotify has always been really good at curated playlists, like the best at making those playlists. But they're still, I'm sure, looking for ways to differentiate themselves mm-hmm. from their competitors. And hopping on the AI bandwagon is a way that they can set themselves apart.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, it's the opposite to like Apple, and I think some others have, like, I think YouTube even done that, where they're leaning heavy on the human side of things and saying, wait, we have actual humans who are doing that for you. Mm-hmm. And we have human DJs that do human things, like really leaning on that and saying it's not technology. And I think Spotify is trying the opposite and saying, hey, everything is generated. Everything is AI.
And for some people,
only we need an NFT and a blockchain in there, and then we're set.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah.
I was going to have an NFT blockchain story today, but I've just read the article and I don't understand a word of it. So I'm going to go with something else.
That has never stopped us, Rich. That has never stopped
us. True. That has never stopped us.
I mean, we've talked about astrophysics and stuff.
like the bosses we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I understand astrophysics way more than this. I had an astrophysics module of my physics A level. I've done some astrophysics. This is meaningless.
Yes,
you're forgetting that at least 2/5 on this panel are Americans.
Yeah, and you know what? I think Rich also just posted something meaningless too.
Oh yeah.
What? The next story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, well, since Ben is champing at the bit to hear the next story.
Okay.
Rich, why don't you fill us in?
It reminds me of something I heard about a number of years ago about the TSA in America, who were presented with two options to their union of either everyone gets a pay rise or everyone gets a badge to wear. Like the police have a badge, but no pay rise. And they voted with the badge. So they all just got a badge.
We're idiots in this country.
And no pay rise. Because it meant more to them to have, I have a badge, I'm in the TSA kind of thing. And they all sat at home. Right? And in a similar way, Elon Musk a couple of months ago decided to take away everybody's blue check mark and charge them money to get it back. And we all laughed. But I think he kind of laughed because everybody started to pay because they wanted their blue badge back more than anything. And while we all laughed at it, the people at Facebook were looking at it going, oh, they're paying. Oh,
ooh, that's a good idea.
Can we roll that out now? Right now, please. Can we get that going? Am I clipping? There's something wrong with my sound at the moment today. But anyway,
you're good on our end.
Okay. It's my end. Oh, very weird. And so, yeah, they're looking at rolling out, paying $12 a month. $12 a month to have a blue check mark on Facebook and Instagram to make sure that, well.
Why are you?
Because we like blue badges on things. So, you know, you can start adding to your list of monthly blue badge subscriptions now. You've got Twitter, you've got Facebook, you've got Instagram. I'm sure all the others, once they start seeing people pay Facebook and Twitter, do you think the others are just going to sit there and leave that money there? You know?
There's the cynical view, which is what you said. And then there is the, let's say, the realistic possibility, at least. I'm not sure how real it is, but I think the ad, I mean, we've heard it from Facebook anyway, but I think the ad market has reached I'm not sure the bottom, but it's quite low.
It's
like the amount of money you can make, or the amount of clicks or views or whatever you need, eyeballs, time to make any money at all. And I mean, don't forget, Facebook is not cheap to run. Not even for a second, I believe that Facebook is cheap to run. They've optimized it probably to the nth degree to make it as cheap as they can, but it's probably still massive because there's, I don't know how many billions of users every day. And that costs money. And I think they've squeezed as much out of the ad market as they can. And now they're looking at, okay, how can we make more money? And this is a way. And I'm actually, I mean, the whole blue Twitter blue thing aside, I think this is a good thing. Paying for your service and getting, so, I mean, I'm not sure I would like to, like, honestly, I would rather pay Mastodon or someone on Mastodon than Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But that has more to do with Facebook as a company than with the general idea of pay. Maybe that is a shift.
It won't keep people off, though, will it? I mean, if you start, you know, there's still going to be everybody there who's using it for free.
It's a typical freemium model, right? There's, I mean, kind of like Dropbox. There's like a gazillion Dropbox users on the free, whatever, it's 15 gigs or something thing. Mm-hmm. And then there is, 1% that pay the $100 a year, whatever it is.
I'm finally in the 1% on something.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's okay. I mean, that's the business model there. Like, a small percentage pays, and they basically pay for everybody else.
And, I mean, the ad bubble has been busting for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly going down and down to the point where you can have more views than a primetime television show and earn enough to buy a Coke.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, to be perfectly honest, if the idea wasn't floated first by Musk, this would have been received very differently, because I think we're at the point, especially on Facebook, where they probably should be charging their business customers more.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are essentially getting free advertising.
Yep.
Facebook do a lot more of that than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I've learned from posting stuff on all the different video platforms, Facebook and Instagram are sort of outwardly hostile about you getting views. They don't want you to get views. They want you to buy views. And they give you every opportunity to do so. That is what it's about on there. It's about boosting this post and paying for this and doing that. None of the others push it anything like as much. TikTok a bit more. YouTube, not really. But Facebook and Instagram are really aggressive with it. That is definitely their business model. And I don't know who's paying for it. At that point, the trouble, what we then end up with is we're back to the old system where the people that you see the most are the ones who can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get streams of Amazon ads in the middle of my Facebook feed because people can about to pay it.
I can't pay Facebook millions of dollars for views, but Coca-Cola can, and so can other people in between me and Coca-Cola, you know, other sort of higher end creators. You know, they can do that sort of thing. So you end up with that same perpetuated system that it's difficult to get into. Facebook and Instagram are just not platforms to build an audience on at all. They're platforms that you connect with an existing audience because that existing audience is on that. And the value of that is going down as the worth of Facebook is, like, who's on Facebook now. It's the demographic is shrinking. And so regardless of how you're doing it, do you really care about reaching this demographic? The people spending money are on TikTok for now. They're going to be on something else in a little while, and that will only last so long. And
I completely disagree.
Okay.
I mean, for the everyday people, mm-hmm. not the people that are watching this kind of show, essentially, Facebook has replaced the Yellow Pages.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And that's where most of the business engagement I know from people with small businesses comes from,
mm-hmm.
on Facebook. And why a lot of these companies probably won't see a nice return on investment on boosted posts or God, I can't talk right now. Boosted posts, paying $12 a month to essentially tell everybody that they're not a scam. Well, it's to be perceived that they're not a scam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
that can be a very viable business expense and a very nice source of revenue for Meta.
Yeah, that's a negligible expense for a business.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, locally, if I look for a plumber, I look for a joiner or someone to come and do some work for me. Generally, I'll look on my local Facebook marketplace for a local guy or on one of our local community groups. So, yeah, completely. So, on that level.
See, I live a very Facebook-free life. And it's just, it's just happened like that. I'm no fan of Facebook, but I do nothing on it or with it. And, I didn't know people did. I honestly didn't know people did.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I find it really, for a lot of Facebook Marketplace is still the Wild Wild West. It's still full of utter crap and people and scammers. But on the other side of things, the community things are good. You'll get a recommend. You know, you can post in one of the community group and say, "I need a plumber," and someone recommend me one, and then you'll get four or five people saying, "We use this guy. It was really great." You know, and so that's massively helpful.
Mm.
So from that point of view, and as Ben says about for small businesses, if you can get a verified ID that says, yes, I'm Fred the plumber and I'm really great. And that's worth 12 quid a month. That's worth $12, £12, whatever it is a month for that guy to have a gold verified identity for him.
Well, I think, you know, Facebook would agree with it all. I mean, yeah, they're going for it. I'm not objecting to it at all, but no, we'll see what happens.
The only thing I'd like Facebook to do is stop spamming me with really poor quality adverts.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Because the interspurts adverts, I've now got to the point where I'm consistently going, no, I do not need to see that. No, I do not want that advert. You know what my
irrelevant,
interests are.
Irrelevant.
Right.
Yeah, irrelevant. You show me.
Sorry, there will be ads for Casio G-Shocks. Here, hang on. The first ad will be. First ad, Amazon Fashion. Seiko Man's watch, Casio watch. Yeah, there you go. Every time.
Facebook for me is a mixture of watches and then and books, because I buy a lot of books. And they've done quite well out of me on the books thing, because generally if they know I've liked an author, you might like this one. And it turns out I do. And they're all on Kindle Unlimited, so I don't care. And I'm just going, yeah, great, thank you. So that model works fantastically, and I keep getting good, interesting books to read. So I'm good with that. But then I get all these random dating sites that, because I'm 50, I see it, which I looked at it and go, why am I seeing dating ads? It says in my profile I'm married. Why do I get dating? And I looked at it. What were the criteria? You're over the age of 45. That was the only reason why I was showing the advert. And I was male. I think it might have said I was male as well, but it may not have done. It may literally have been that I am now a middle-aged person, so therefore I want to have an affair. And so I keep making these go away now because I'm getting bored of seeing them with the same picture of the same woman who's clearly on all the sites.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason why you're seeing that. And it's because you, regardless of whether or not it's an appropriate ad for you, you are the demographic.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be that demographic now.
And it's a demographic that has proven over a very long time that that's an appropriate ad, just generally speaking, for that group. And I see tons of dating service ads in my feed all the time, even though I have told Facebook I'm not interested in those. I still get different ones that come up, and it's a thing, because you and I are the demographic for that. Either we're presumed single, or we're presumed to be on the hunt for additional partners.
Yeah, we're on the hunt for an affair, yes. Mm-hmm. We're of that age now where, to be fair, a couple of my friends have been having a go at that game. So I've been the one listening to the stories and picking up the pieces. But yes, we are that demographic, aren't we? But I don't need to. If I said, yes, please show me some of those, I'd be very happy to see them. But I didn't. That's my problem. Is I want to opt into seeing things like that. If I could get to a page on Facebook that says, show me adverts about cars, about watches, about music, and about books and about films, I'm very happy you show me as many of them as you like. I do not want to see dating, alcohol, or a few other things. I can never find the damn thing. So
it's not the setting you're thinking of. when you go into your profile and you list all the things that are your interests, put those things in there.
I think they already are.
I also still
get offers of people that I frankly don't want to tie bride either. And again, correct demographic, but you know,
fabulous.
I'm from Yorkshire. So, I do not want to tie bride.
So, Ian, what you're saying is you fit the profile.
Yeah, clearly I fit the profile of male 50. That is the profile.
I've wished for years I could do that with Amazon.
Yeah, and Jeff does too. Male 50, male somewhere around 50. And so we both have the fun of being shown ad sites that neither of us need. But I'd like to have the choice of being able to make that decision. That's my biggest bugbear with the whole thing.
I wish I could tell Amazon I don't own a PS5. I would happily tell them what I have got. I'd give them it to stop recommending useless shit to me. Like, if just say, no, I've got a Switch, show me all the Switch games you want. I buy Switch games, but they're always like, do you want this PS5 game? I'm like, no, no, I don't.
It's going away slowly now. My poor dearly departed mum liked Daniel O'Donnell. We've talked about this before. And all of these other kind of really crap country and Western things, Irish country and Western-y type stuff. And a usual birthday gift would be for one of these kind of things. So once or twice a year, or maybe even other, or in between, if I was feeling like I'll send my mum something, I'd buy her an album or whatever, a CD or a DVD, and I'd send her it. And so still to this day, occasionally I'll get an email saying, this is new out. No, I don't know. I don't want it. I don't want to go away. And
but it was appropriate to target that to you because you were buying that as a gift for someone.
Yeah, because I bought it before.
I'm just getting stuff that I've never checked. Like, I've never bought a PlayStation 5 game from them. They can stop now. But Amazon are famous for it, aren't they? With the whole, you bought a toilet seat. Here's 27 other toilet seats. Do you want more toilet seats?
No, I just bought one. I don't need more.
You will buy another toilet seat in the next 5 to 10 years. So,
yeah, it's the thing where you go, look, I looked at that before.
So you the recommendations are going down the
shows
crapper.
Up in my Amazon recommendations. Just, we don't want to go there. But you do. Nope. Do you know where we want to go? We want to go to TSO Host because TSO Host is awesome. What makes them awesome is that they provide top-notch web hosting services and support for buying domain names, and they are leveraging what they do so that we can be here for you. TSO Host is giving us the bandwidth we need so we can live stream shows to you every single week, and they're giving us hosting so that there's a place for the website to live, and all of our show files so that you can watch or listen to your favorite episodes at your leisure. Without TSO Host being here supporting us, we would not be online. And that's not hyperbole. That's just straight up a fact. The resources it takes to do what we are doing would prohibit us from being able to make this happen. So TSO Host is being incredibly generous by providing us with those resources and just doing it because they want to be part of the community and see us succeed. So thank you, TSO Host, for doing that. Now, what you can do to show your appreciation for TSO Host being here supporting us is go on social media and thank them for being here and doing their part to keep the British Tech Network online. Super easy, only takes a minute, so please do that. When you decide that you need to buy a new domain name or you need a place to host your website, well, here you go. Hit them up. TSO Host is ready to help you with that too. Just get everything in your cart and then add in the discount code BTN20 and you get 20% off your order, which is an incredibly generous offer. So thank you, TSO Host, for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. And Patrice, preemptively, thank you for helping me out by telling people where they can find the chat.
Yeah, I can tell everybody how to do that. It's very, very easy. If you are listening to this live, which you can do every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, to Amigo Live. Also, by the way, if you're into the Apple kind of things, we have the Mac show every Friday, 4 p.m. UK time, also live. And when that is happening, you head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com and you're in. You can talk to us live. You can see all the amazing links we just put in. There's literally a ton of links, like for the Nintendo Switch, for example. There is like the cool things that are coming up. There will be links in there. And then there's like really fun discussions happening in there with other lovely people. The only lovely person who is not there, who just sent me a text message. Hey, Tom. He said to like, I should tell you all hi, and he misses you. And Tom, you should be in the chat. Just saying. He's on vacation. Yeah. Hi, Tom. Okay. Hi, Tom. Yeah, so you can do that. Head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com and you're in. Let's say you are, I'm listening to this in the car, and I'm like, it's recorded as a podcast and it's not live. And you're like, but that article that Ben talked about, I really want that link. I want to share that. Very easy. You can still get to that. Obviously not the live chat part, because that's done. But unless you invent the time machine or travel really fast around the sun or something like that, at least that's what I've heard. if you do that, let me know. but you can still get to the chat. That's the summary. You head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then there is a little calendar that pops up, because we don't know which show you want to like see. And you put in today's date, today as we're recording this, which is the 23rd of February, 2023. February 23rd, 2023. And then you see everything we've talked about. It's that easy.
Awesome. Thank you, Patrice.
Yeah, and if you do the time travel thing, please bring back a couple of humpback whales from the 80s.
Oh, yeah. And some other stuff, by the way.
Yeah, we might need that. Yep.
Like a really nice scientist, for example.
Right. Yeah. Practice your slingshot effect math skills, because you're going to need them.
So true.
Yep. Patrice, thank you. You rock. All right. And it is now time for the cool thing. So who has the first thing? And that would be Ben.
And speaking of science, I would like to share my favorite podcast. A few years ago, a friend of mine, Dr. Kirsten Kiki Sanford, came out with This Week of Science. It's been at a few places, including Twit over the years, but now they do it independently on YouTube every Wednesday.
That's awesome.
So if you want all the science news in one place with three very fun hosts, you can just head over to twist.org, follow them on the social medias.
Very awesome. Nice. I haven't listened to This Week in Science regularly, but every time I do, I tell myself I should listen to it regularly. Nice pick. And Patrice. Oh, nice pick. That can cost people some money.
Oh, that is going to cost people some money, but not as much. Well, it depends. So I think talked about that last week on the Mac show, maybe the pre-show or in the post-show, that I'm setting up a Mac Mini home server right now. I actually did that last couple of days, and I needed some way of having some extra disk space, because as much disk space as you can buy from Apple, it is one, rather expensive, and two, rather limited. So if you have a bigger collection of movies and stuff, you probably need more than what you can even buy from Apple. And part one of that pick, of the cool thing that I want to pick today, is the OWC Mercury Elite Pro Dual. It's a series of, well, external hard drive enclosures, basically. So there's like the, I think the single, the dual, the quad, I don't know, maybe bigger ones, I don't remember. It's basically, so this one has two hard drive slots. It's a little, I don't know how to explain that. It's like a little box. It's like...
like a lunchbox. It's the size of like a lunchbox.
Like a bigger, a big, quite a big lunchbox, but yes. You put two drives in, and they connect, like you can decide whether they are... what rate level you want, or if you just want them as individual disks. There's a little selector on the back. You have to set that at the beginning, because if you switch that in between, the data is going to get lost. That makes sense. For anybody who's technical enough to understand that, that makes sense. They warn you to not do that. Mm-hmm. And then you connect it over this. So this one, this is the newer version. There's like an older version, I think. I think it's a non-pro, which does, I think it's still USB 3. Speed 5 gigabit per second. This one is the USB-C version, USB 3.2 over USB-C. And you connect that to your Mac and you're good to go. You have some pretty nice hardware. Doesn't need a lot of power, so that was one of the things. It's not the whole server or anything. It's literally, I mean, the drives will use some power, like a couple of watts, and then the enclosure takes another couple and that's it. And it is a solid metal, which is really nice, like works really well with your Mac Mini, like looks kind of Apple-y, which you would expect from OWC. Comes in nice packaging, all the screws and everything included. And I think it was like 170 euros, so probably instead of $150, right around about.
Good price.
Maybe 200.
Yeah.
I'm looking up the prices right.
I think it's $200 because it should be the opposite. So something like that.
Is that available from Amazon and places like that? Have you got to go to the States and
get it? No, it is available from on Amazon. It's available. Actually, Amazon was more expensive. I didn't order it from them. Yeah, Amazon was like quite a bit more expensive here. And I just ordered
£177 over here. Just found it.
Yeah, I just ordered it from like a smaller electronics shop. And easy peasy. So yeah,
if
really
you buy
good.
Just the enclosure, Patrice, in the US it's $169.
Okay. So not a bad price. No. As I said, and I would recommend doing that because I mean they have options where you can buy them with the hard drives. But I would just recommend buy the enclosure and then buy whatever hard drive you want in whatever size you want. You're not limited by what they're offering. I bought some Western Digital Gold 10 terabyte disks, which were also not super expensive. So, yeah, I'm set. And they're fast. Mm-hmm. So that's the other part. That's it. And for, I mean, like it supports 3.5 and 2.5 inch drives. Speed wise, you don't need Thunderbolt for that. Even USB 3.2 is probably way too fast for spinning hard drives.
Very nice.
That works. And it has, like, the cool thing about this one is it has two USB slots, USB ports, not slots, and another USB-C. So it has three extra ports that you can connect stuff to. So there's nice. That. Or another enclosure, by the way. There you can daisy chain them.
Very nice.
So that's my cool thing.
All right. And you'll definitely cost people money with that. OWC makes great stuff.
They do. And thanks, Chuck, for recommending it, because that was a good idea.
Yeah, Chuck says he has something that he's holding for a cool thing that's going to cost me a lot of money. And he keeps teasing what it is. So I'm looking forward to and dreading the day when he drops that one on us.
What is that? A $20,000 like Apple Watch that you will buy? I don't know. The Muppets Apple Watch? I don't know.
The Muppets Apple Watch.
No. That would be the one Kelly would buy.
It's true.
That would actually be kind of cool. Well, all right. So after we're done with the show, I'm gonna look for Apple watch Muppet watch bands. All right, Rich, tell us about your cool thing.
Okay, so in my quest to find good editing apps on the iPhone, I have eventually landed on captions.ai, which is a fantastically clever AI-powered video editing app for making, well, all kinds of videos, really, but I'm using it for short-form stuff. So it's powered through AI, with AI through it. I'm going to have trouble saying AI a lot, so get ready for me to screw that up in the future. I'm going to put a link in the chat to my latest TikTok video, because I used the new functionality. Where's the chat room? Go there. So if you have a look at this video, mute it. It doesn't matter what I'm saying in the video. But the point of this video is that at no point am I looking at the camera. And you'll notice in the video, I'm rarely not looking at the camera. But in real life, when I was recording it, sat here in this chair, I wasn't looking at the camera at all. And it now has AI-generated eyes to make it look like you're always looking at the camera. Wow. So
that's amazing. I mean, it's incredible. It looks like you are really, really looking at the camera.
Yeah, and I am really not. Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? And it just does this on your phone. You just put the video in it. It detects your speech and brings out the subtitles. That's all automatic. It cuts out pauses automatically. It will do the eyes now automatically. It's absolutely incredible. It will do AI script generation, which I've been testing out, and it's actually pretty good. You could make a TikTok on anything, and it will write you the script. It will display the script on its own teleprompter-style camera app, and then it will tune it like it does. It's incredible. For all the features, it's like the freemium model. You can use most of it for free. But otherwise, I think it's £50 a year for the app on an annual subscription. So if you're someone who's making a lot of TikToks and you would like to get some scripts generated for you and just make it look like you're always looking at the camera, then I can't recommend it enough. I'm having a load of fun with it.
I need this for Teams calls. I have so many people who are looking off somewhere, and I'm like, just look at the freaking camera when you're talking to me.
It's so good, isn't it? I mean, stuff like that, when you look at what NVIDIA are doing with video conferencing, it's quite staggering that they're doing the, you know, capturing points on a face and reconstructing the face on the other end in real time with CGI, which is just so staggering. So you don't need high bandwidth for the video call. You can get photo quality video call with next to no bandwidth. But your computer is in real time. You need an RTX 4090 to be reconstructing somebody's face in real time photo realistically. But you know, it's how this stuff starts, isn't it? But this has been good. So I recommend it a lot for your TikToks.
That's really cool.
And the script generation is really pretty good. I don't know what system it's using on the back end to do it, or if it's their own or what, but it's really, I've been getting people like, give me a thing I know nothing about and I'll tell you all about it. And it works every time.
That is really cool. I'm still amazed at how it looks like you're just looking at the camera.
I know, isn't it good? It's kind of staggering. But
not so much so that it's like creepy fake.
No. Mm.
It's the right amount of you're looking right at the camera.
Yeah. And it has slightly whitened and enlarged my eyes as well. Fractionally, just a little bit. Before you set it on, it shows you a side-by-side comparison. And it's like, I look a lot better in this other one, in this new one. I look far less tired and like I'm really paying attention. So, yeah, it's great.
Very nice.
I can't wait to see what they come up with next.
That's really cool. All right, Ian, your turn.
My turn. I've got a text expanding tool. It's cross-platform, works on Windows, Linux, and macOS. It's called Espanso. And it's really cool little tool for doing autocomplete of type text. I used to use, I've used a few of these things over the years, and I keep, again, like many things, I try new ones out every now and again if the other one does. I've been using Rocket Typist up to now, and that's been misbehaving recently. So I thought, I'll try another one out to see how that goes. And this one's really nice. Warning, though, it is quite a coder's tool. So you have to be comfortable typing a bit of YAML to create your, which is a horrible language to type. Really is a horrible language because it's very persnickety about exactly how the indents are laid out in your code. But they give you examples on how to do it to create your little autocomplete. So I've got, it's just a plain text file I populate with all my type this, regards Ian, you know, type KR, whatever, and regards Ian appears, you know, things like that. These little things that I use day to day that means I cut down the amount of typing I do and filling in little boxes for my usernames and filling in little boxes for bits of address details or email addresses and stuff. It's fantastic. And I really quite like it. I always start it with a special character. Top tip for using any of the text expanding tools, always start your autocomplete thing with a special character, not with, and preferably one that doesn't need you to use shift to get to. I tend to use colon or semicolon as the ones for mine. Yep.
I'm semicolon.
That was a tip from Merlin Mann or Beck Terpstra, one of those guys from years ago.
Yep.
Just something
yeah, Brett,
to get.
No, it's Merlin. Brett doesn't do it. Merlin? I know that. Yeah,
it's Merlin.
Brett starts with
Merlin
an
Mann,
X or something, I think. I remember that.
Yeah. And it was one of those guys that I'd listened to and thought, oh, that's a really good idea. So all mine will begin with a real simple thing in the early days of it. And this is a very nice tool. It's open source, privacy minded. Your data is going nowhere except for the plain text file that lives in your home folder. So, yeah. Really good. Mm-hmm. I quite like it. I said the only thing I don't really like is YAML. There's no GUI for you to start entering things in. You need to be able to, but it can do an awful lot. If you have the mindset to play around with it, it can do an awful lot. It's very, very clever.
It looks really good. I'm going to give it a try. I mean,
have a play. It's it's
nothing against Text Expander, but I'm kind of starting to thread their UI. It's not good. So I'll try.
It's due for a refresh.
This.
Yeah.
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 I like this. It seems to work pretty nicely. And there's plugins as well. So you can add in extra functionality like emojis and stuff and things. I still have to figure out how that one works, but there's all manner of extra bits you can add. Very, very clever.
They have packages. So there's like a package system where you can say like French accents, emojis, dad jokes.
Yeah. Okay. Dad jokes. Yeah. All sorts. Markdown.
Nice.
So if you're doing things with Markdown, you can do autocompletes on various bits and pieces as well. So it's fantastic. Really neat little tool.
Yeah. And of course, they do scripting and so on if you need to.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's donationware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give it a try. Already downloaded.
Cool.
Yeah, give it a go. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, native M1, so awesome.
Yeah.
And available on Windows, Linux, and
Linux and Mac. Yeah, they've got versions of both Wayland and X11 on the Linux side, as well as 64-bit on Windows. And on Windows, you can have a portable version, so you don't have to install it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all very good.
Nice. I feel like I showed up with the wrong thing for a cool thing today, because everyone else is just like really useful. And I brought a Lego kit.
That's useful. Makes me spend my money.
Okay, there we go. All right. So this is a Lego Star Wars kit, and it's a droid BD-1. And if you've watched The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett. Yeah, Book of Boba Fett. You saw not BD-1, but the same model droid helping build Mando's midlife crisis spaceship. Excuse me. It originated in one of the Star Wars video games and turned out to be a really popular character. So, Lego did a kit, and it's, I want to say, like 3/4 actual size. So it's pretty big. and it's 1,062 pieces, and it's $100, so it's less than a dime a brick. And yes, I can show you what the finished thing looks like.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I like.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah, and it's head tips, and his little antennas. You can move those around, and a feature apparently of the character in the video game is that it has this little side panel that opens on its head, and it has these like little health capsules for the game players. So they even have that in here too. But yeah, it's nicely detailed, and it was a fun build. It was also an interesting build because each section, as you're building it, it's like you build the core body piece and then the legs and then the head. As you're building each part, it doesn't look like anything until you get to the last couple things you stick together. And then it's like, oh, okay, now I see what this is. And especially with the head, you get basically all the way to the end where you're ready to put the final pieces on. And up until that point, it just looks like this weird mix of random color bricks. And then you start putting the last couple things on, and it magically turns into this head. Anyhow, it was a fun build, and it's a cool little display piece. And it typically now lives behind me, like where I sit completely would block where it is on a shelf. So I figured if I'm going to share it with you, I better do it as a cool thing.
So, Jeff, yeah. I too know what it's like to have a robot behind me.
He's back again. He's back again.
The difference is mine is here to help you. Yours is not.
Oh, he's here to help you into the afterlife.
Okay. Fair. Yep. All right. So with that, wow. Thank you for putting a smile on my face. All of you absolutely rock. This has been so much fun. And sorry, I've had to duck off camera several times. I'm getting over a cold. Not COVID, hooray. Just a regular old-fashioned cold. So I've been coughing and sneezing off camera. But I made it through the end of the show, and I fully believe that part of what made that possible was the happy energy that I'm getting from all of you. So thank you. Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me here every Thursday on a big show, talking nonsense about old tech. If not, I'll be on probably Facebook, because I still kind of do that a bit. But the best place to find me is LinkedIn. Look for Ian Grant. I work for Veeam. That's the easiest thing to find me for. I don't do too much of the socials. I think I'm too old now.
Yeah. Or too boring. And the too ads dull, that you're getting on things. Your stream prove it.
Yeah. I am a member of the Dull Man's Club on Facebook.
Awesome.
And I realized when I looked at that, I fit right in.
Well, it's good to know your tribe.
Yeah. They are my people.
Yeah. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, I'm here every week on the Big Show on Thursdays, also on the Mac Show on Fridays, by the way, if you're into the non-Apple side of things. Everything I'm doing, like all the social media links, I think there's still Facebook there, but like don't use it. all the projects, the podcast, literally everything I'm doing, you can find on thepatrice.com. And if you're looking for a Mastodon instance that you trust, like a small one, then like go to techhangout.social, because that is mine. That's what I'm running, and I will set up a British Tech Network account there very soon.
Awesome, and thank you, Rich. Where can people find you?
I have a new thing. I got a Linktree thing. So I've got that now. So it's Linktree/early morning barking. They do a funny thing with the URL. It's linktr.ee. slash early morning parking.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah. So how very Web 2.0 of them all. Like, yeah, at least there are vowels in it, so that's the thing. But yeah, so I have that, and that has links to everything on YouTube and TikTok and Twitch. Now I'm on Twitch, and my podcast and Patreon and Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and stuff. They got too much. That became too much stuff to list it all separately. So Linktree / early morning barking, it's all on there.
And I guess that means I should probably go check my Linktree and see what I have on there, because it's been a while.
I got the pro account. It's pretty good. It puts big previews of things on there. I'm quite enjoying it.
Oh, nice.
Especially nice. The podcasting section that puts up, you know, your latest episode and links to all the different sources and all kinds of things. It's worth checking out.
And I'm looking.
And it was, do you know what? I was paying £6 a month to host a WordPress site that I wasn't doing anything with and that looked a bit gross. And for £4 a month for Linktree Pro, that I can just point my URL at eventually when I figure out what the hell I did to the DNS servers a year ago, then it's just easier. I've broken it. It's a hover thing. I've broken it. I've done something to it.
It's you've broken it. Hey, I just looked up my Linktree, and I actually put Mastodon on it. Mine has Instagram, Mastodon, YouTube, and Twitter. Huh. So I guess I must have set it up. Actually, that doesn't mean anything, because I've had that account for a while, that Mastodon account. All right. Well, apparently I need to update Linktree. Awesome. Okay, Ben, where can people find you?
Where can people find me indeed? Well, Jeff, you can find me at Ben Rathig on your social media of choice. You can also find me at rathigtech.blogspot.com. This week on the YouTube channel, which used to be the Tech Hangout YouTube channel, I put up a beta of a daily, or not a beta, but kind of an alpha run through of a daily Rathig Tech news show that I'm kind of throwing around.
Cool. I will go check that out. Awesome. Oh, right. I need to tell people where to find me. Let's see.
Nah.
Most Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's show, Mac Voices Live, here on Thursdays on The Big Show, and then most Thursday evenings on Dave Ginsburg's show, In Touch with iOS, and then on Fridays on here again on The Mac Show, and then also on The Context Machine with Brian Chaffin. And then on the socials, I'm Jay Gamut on basically everything. The ones that I'm active on right now are Mastodon and Instagram. Hey, thank you to all of you for being so awesome and putting up with my cold today. This has been a lot of fun. And everyone that has tuned in to watch or listen live, thank you for being here. And if you've been in the chat room, hey, so glad you were there too. Everyone that watches or listens later, thank you for being part of the BTN family. Thanks to TSO Host for being here to support us. Shout out to Mueller for making sure we have people for shows. And shout out to Ewan, just because it's Ewan. And with that, hey, tune in next Thursday for The Big Show again. Don't forget to join us tomorrow for The Mac Show. And everyone, have a great weekend.